The Great Lakes account for more than 20% of the world's surface freshwater supply. Lake Michigan, like all of the Great Lakes, is to a great degree fed by groundwater. There's so much water under the ground, many towns don't even have a municipal water system. Everyone just digs a well and gets their water off their own land. And that water is all free. Free water isn't just a nice bonus for residents who don't have to pay a monthly water bill. It can mean millions in savings for companies that use lots of water for their business, like agriculture. Near the northern tip of Lake Michigan, Black Star Farms is set in the midst of rolling hills. Don Coe is the managing partner of this working farm, vineyard, creamery, and bed and breakfast all in one. Coe says he knows, as a businessman and as a farm operator, how important water is to him. But despite its crucial role, Coe doesn't know much about how his water usage affects others.
I report the water I use on this farm, but I have no idea where my aquifer spreads to. I don't know on the water that I'm extracting and the water I'm using, am I negatively impacting upon my neighbors? I just don't know that.
Coe has two wells on his property, which supply his entire 160-acre agritourism operation.
What incentive do I have to impose conservation methods on the use of my water? Particularly when I'm drawing from my own aquifers. You know, I'm not on a water main system where I'm paying for the water that I'm using.
For much of the past decade, Michiganers have been debating some of those questions. How to determine whether one person's use of groundwater is affecting their neighbors? And should the government be involved in regulating that use? At the heart of the issue is perhaps the most water-intensive industry there is, bottled water. A recent uproar involving Nestle brought the question of water regulation and use to a head. In 2007, the corporation was already operating one controversial bottled water plant in this part of the state, and they were 6 years into a legal battle with citizens who thought too much water was being extracted from a vital watershed. Then the company announced it wanted to pump millions of gallons of spring water from the nearby White River to be bottled, trucked out of state, and sold under the Ice Mountain brand.
My name is Jay Peasley. I'm a board member on the White River Watershed Partnership, and I'm also a member of Michigan Citizens for Water Conservation, or MCWC.
Peasley lives about 20 miles upstream from this spot on the White River. We're standing in the middle of the woods, and he's pointing out a thicket of trees where Nestle wanted to set up shop.
We're probably 3 miles downstream from the headwaters, and it's just a nice, clean, clear, pristine trout stream that's running through a swamp, and there's really no development. There might be 6 houses in this square mile, so it's just beautiful.
Michigan Citizens for Water Conservation was the leading voice against Nestle. They argued that Nestle's plans would have negative effects on the local environment, deplete fish stocks, and would harm the community's quality of life.
They were talking about pumping, you know, over 100,000, maybe even 250,000 gallons a day. And as you can, you know, we can walk down and you can see the depth of water. It isn't that deep right now. So you're talking about, you know, cutting the flow by, I think it was 20% or something. And it's a blue ribbon trout stream up here. They have native brookies in it. So not only would the fish be impacted, so would everything else that lives here. You know, the goldfinch, the eagles, just everything that live in this area.
Should we walk down there?
Sure.
Nestle denied that their proposed use was substantial enough to hurt the underground aquifer or surrounding ecosystems. But the battle over the White River never made it to court. In the face of severe opposition, the local township denied the company a permit.
Yeah, not very deep.
No, it's not. You know, in the springtime when there's runoff, you know, there's excess water then, but Nestle doesn't look at, you know, only taking when there's an excess, they just want to pump full time. And the bad part about it, too, in our group's discussion with Nestle was we asked them, well, how many extra jobs is this going to affect? And it was going to add no jobs to the plant at all, just take.
The community group's lawsuit against Nestle was also successful in the case of the Little Muskegon River. But a seemingly minor wording of an appeals court ruling in the case may actually have done more harm than good. Before, a landowner could use as much water as they wanted, as long as it didn't affect their neighbor's ability to do the same. But now, the economic benefit created by extracting water has more weight. That economic benefit can be judged as more important than the ecological and environmental harm that might occur. Michigan State Representative Dan Scripps.
Now, the standard is you can use it until your neighbor's well runs dry, unless you're making enough money to show that it's worth it, even though you're causing harm to the resource, even though it's not sustainable and you're hurting your neighbor's ability to access their well and their water. Now, if you can show a large enough profit, we may let you do it anyway. Well, that, I think, puts us on a slippery slope.
Scripps has proposed a solution in the state legislature. He wants to put Michigan's groundwater into what's called a public trust. It's a designation that already protects most rivers, lakes, and streams in Michigan.
It gives people power to stop government from taking your water, or from handing it to a private corporation, or from a private corporation taking it without your consent.
That's attorney Jim Olson. He argued the case against Nestle. He says including groundwater in the public trust is necessary to protect the common water supply.
It's not just about groundwater. It's all one hydrologic system. I mean, you can't arbitrarily say no law is going to allow the extraction of blood out of a human being, but it's okay to take it out of their bone marrow. I mean, it has to be treated as one system.
Industries that use large amounts of water are understandably opposed to anything that might prevent them from getting it for free. In the face of the public trust legislation, a think tank, run by a former state official who had approved a permit for Nestle's water bottling plant, began a PR campaign against the idea of a public trust for groundwater. The central argument of the campaign was that the law could lead to the taxing and regulation of people's wells.
Everybody has their own wells. The prospect of being taxed for your water literally drives everybody up the wall.
Ray France, like just about all of his neighbors, gets his water from a well right next to his house. France became politically active when he heard about the bill that would put all the state's groundwater into a public trust. If the bill passes, Michigan's groundwater would legally be owned by all the citizens of Michigan and protected by the state. France says the public trust designation could mean more taxes, and that's bad news.
There's two sides to this bill that are detrimental. It's a property rights issue, and it's also a jobs issue for the state of Michigan.
Eric Neubecker is also worried that business would suffer if people were charged for using groundwater. He's a geologist at his family's well-digging business, the Raymer Company. They drill more than 250 wells every year.
The abundant groundwater in the state of Michigan is one reason why farmers, the fruit growers are here, and now if we make it unattractive for them to be in business here, they're going to go elsewhere to some other state that wants them. And that would have an adverse effect on our business, because there'd be fewer wells to work on, fewer wells to drill. It'd just have a total, you know, negative effect on the entire economy.
Folks like Neubecker have dominated the news coverage of the public trust legislation. But whether their fears are actually warranted is up for debate. Representative Scripps says his bill would not result in any taxes at all, and adds that the state legislature could tax water on its own, today, under current state law, even without a public trust designation. It's also an election year, and the groundwater issue has become intertwined with property rights. Ray France says that's an important part of what being American means to him.
Anytime we lose a portion of our property rights, whether it's through significant zoning or the riparian rights that we're looking at, or even mineral rights, you lose part of the value of your property. And personal property, private property, is the cornerstone of our democracy. It's what gives us all the wealth that we enjoy.
Vermont and Hawaii have somewhat similar public trust laws for groundwater, and the results there have been positive. Representative Scripps says the private property argument doesn't always make sense, especially in the case of natural resources like water, which are shared.
A private right to water, if the water's not there, doesn't mean a whole lot. And I don't have any problem with private ownership of any number of things, that the trees on your property are very clearly your trees. And the problem is when you get to resources that don't stop at your property lines. And as much as you may want to, you're not fully able to protect those resources under your property, and you need something larger, the collective, to step in and provide protections that any individual landowner can't provide on their own. And I think that government has a legitimate role to play in that, to say that for certain things, our air, our water, and others, that there's a common interest in making sure that we're protecting that for the long term.
Black Star Farm's Don Coe has lived and worked in Europe and says that while people there may never have had the same private property protections as people in the U.S., the result has been better for the population as a whole. He says the idea of private ownership of water sources may be outdated.
Look, the reality is we live in a world economy, and we have a great demand for the resources of the United States from the world, as well as we have a great interest in declining resources in the United States. We can't live in a laissez-faire, every man for himself world anymore. America has gone past that point. And I personally believe that every one of us who live in this country have a responsibility not only to our own personal freedoms, but we have a responsibility to our neighbors. And you can cry or decry loss of personal freedom all you want, but that turns us into a tribal society, turning inward on itself and attempting to recreate a long-distance past. We can't live in yesterday's world. We have to be thinking about tomorrow's world.
For Making Contact, I'm Andrew Stelzer.